dare great things for Christ. Christ calls us to dare great things. In the marketplace, as well as in the mission field, there has never been a time like the present for the spirit of the Catholic entrepreneur. Now is the time for men and women of great courage and great vision to engage our church and our culture. Now is the time to dare great things. And here is your host as we dare great things, Father Nathan Cromley, the president and founder of the St. John Institute.
As we try to navigate our way as Catholics in a modern world, many of us wonder what the recipe is for true success. Everyone wants a happy world and a healthy country, but many people aren't very clear about what role the church or God has to play in giving us those. In fact, however, there is a very clear recipe, and I like to call it the four anchors. In this five-part series, I'm going to walk you through those four anchors and give you practical tips on how to implement them yourself. Hey everybody, I'm glad to be with you, able to teach you and go deeper with you at these great seminars. I'm just so excited about what we're doing at the St. John Leadership Network because we're trying really hard to bring the depths of God's wisdom found in His Word into the hearts of Christians who are engaging our world in His name. And I'm especially privileged to be able to do this with you who are people in the professions and businesses, owners of businesses, managers in businesses, working. Because you know what? What you represent for our culture and our world in general is this pursuit of efficiency, pursuit of productivity, pursuit of collaboration, pursuit of teamwork that we need. I mean, if we could add the pursuit of moral excellence to those other pursuits, we would just have an amazing recipe for humanity. And it's one of the tragedies that we do today is that we kind of separate that out. We say our family doesn't have anything to do with our workplace, or our religion doesn't have anything to do with our workplace. But that's so false. We really have to change that monologue that we have going on in our heads, because to say that your family or your faith has nothing to do with your workplace is to say that you have nothing to do with your workplace, okay? So, or that you're not allowed to bring who you are into work. And to the degree that a work environment forces that scenario, it also deprives itself of the values that you can bring to it. And this is so important, therefore. If you are a Christian, you need to be able to bring the values, maybe not the explicit proclamation of the faith, but at the same time, the values that come from that faith, the way of working, the way of being, the way of speaking, the way of interacting. Because otherwise, what you're just an automaton being used as a cog in the machine. And while that might seem appealing to some because of the financial benefits it could yield, in the end, it is not fulfilling. And we're also allowing our country and our generalized culture to be deprived of the value of workspaces that are dedicated to the values that come from God. I mean, how is, in the end, what we're facing is that a lot of us, you know, even you listening to the talk right now, we just really struggle to see that our religion has a value for our secular counterparts. And that's got to change. Jesus Christ did not come in order to make a few Christians out of the world and then leave everyone else behind so that those who knew him would have a good time with him, but not to make him known. No, he made himself known to Christians so that Christians could make him known to the world. I don't think Jesus had a real problem with self-esteem, everybody. You know, I think he was pretty sure about the value that he had for the world. He called himself the light of the world. He called himself the savior of the world. He came in order to bring the whole world up. So that the real challenge is, I think a lot of us just struggle to understand what value Jesus actually has at a practical level. Like, what does this mean? We think of salvation as something that's just at the level of souls going to heaven. And we completely forget the impact that the soul going to heaven has when that soul is located in a body. When your soul is going to heaven, that means that your body radiates out a whole nother set of values, a way of living, a way of thinking, a way of decorating, a way of celebrating, a way of eating. All the different aspects of our culture find their true radiance and are uplifted by people who live them and work in them in a way that, well, that comes from God. I mean, if my soul knows Jesus and knows God, then my body will look and act differently. This is the whole beautiful thing of building up the kingdom of heaven. And what we find in the church is consistent teaching about the social realities of the world, like economics and work and society and civil politics and all these things, is that generalized human advancement towards better education, better healthcare, better economic conditions, the advancement of peoples is led by Christians who demonstrate to the human person what true advancement looks like because they're living it already in their hearts. This is why we have to become a lot more aggressive about the world of work and the world of business and stop saying that business is just about money and about profit. That's a definition that was given to the business world by itself and by a fallen nature. The church has a very different vision for business. It's a place where culture can be cleansed and culture can be formed, a place of collaboration, of equality, of genuine pride in what we do, and of great products and great services that are done in great ways with great benefits for all. It might sound like an ideal, but it's not. It's a vision that's rooted in Jesus, whom we claim to be, in fact, a benefit for every human being who comes to know him. If Jesus is not ashamed to proclaim himself, we should not be ashamed to proclaim him. My point is, though, that you don't have to always proclaim him by saying, you know, Jesus Christ is Lord and walking around trying to get people to be baptized. That's one level, one way of proclamation, but it's not the only way, and it's certainly not the first way. The very first way that we evangelize is by joining the people that we are trying to evangelize, making community with them, opening a business, for example. And then the second way is by our way of life. That's the second stage of evangelization, where we demonstrate by the way that we live that there's a hidden source to who we are, inviting people's questions. Well, usually that's all the further you're going to get to in the workplace. And maybe that's okay, but that's already a lot. What we do, a lot of us, though, is we make ourselves anonymous. We are Christians in church, and then we leave church, and we act like we don't even know the Lord. And so, like, you know, our lives are not different. And so people aren't asking the question, what makes you different? Who do you know? Why do you live the way that you're living? And so in the end, we end up not even evangelizing. And most of us don't even think that that's a big deal because practically we're just not convinced of the difference that God makes. And that's the first challenge point that I want to bring to you guys and have you really reflect on this. I think that if our church's influence isn't growing, it's because we're not selling her. Right? We're not selling the message of the gospel. Now, why aren't we selling the message? No, selling in the speak of, like, you know, spreading it, right? Like, but selling in the, like, bringing people in. Why aren't we doing that? And I think that concretely it's because a lot of us struggle personally to really see the impact that God makes. If God hasn't made an impact in my personal life, well, then there's really no reason why I should try to think that my business could serve him, etc. And so we really need to start there and say, well, gosh, is God my God, first of all, in my own life? And if he is in my own life, what difference has he made there? And if you say he's made a positive difference, well, then it totally makes sense to say then we need to spread that positive difference, but any way that we can, right? But can you name the positive difference? That's a great challenge. You know, if you're going to write now, take out a piece of pen and paper and write down for me three reasons why belief in God will help our world, you know, and then say, okay, if I can be convinced of those three reasons, well, then why wouldn't I promote that belief in God every way that I could? Because otherwise, am I going to get those three differences by any other means? Is there any other better way to those three differences? But I would be a challenge. I think most people can't write down those three differences, which is why we stay silent and we act like our professional career doesn't need Christians in it. Again, like, and I'm not saying you got to proclaim your faith out loud and say all these things about Jesus and turn people off. I'm just saying you need to put on a clean pair of pants every day and go into work every day with dignity and show up on time, check out on time, be honest, have full of respect, treat people well, have a smile on your face, stop complaining, stop gossiping, stop lying. I mean, you know, just the basics. But that in itself will set you apart as someone different. And when people then ask you why you're different, well, then you can tell them. But already having that kind of worker is kind of the dream. Even as a boss, my goodness, if you could hire people that acted like Christians, it would be attractive. Because Christian people are hardworking, honest people who have values that they bring into the workplace. They bring their family values into what they do. And we all know that when it comes to jobs, not everything's in that job description. There's a way of working, a culture in the work, and even things that need to be done that can only be tackled by people who are working for something different than they could ever be paid for. They're working because it's who they are. Wouldn't it be amazing to hire people who have a sense of who they are and bring that into the workplace? Well, that's what Christians do. That's what you're called to do. And that's part, that will bring the difference of God more into our society, more realistically and quickly, and many other things that we think.
Would you like to hear more from Father Nathan? Join the St. John Leadership Network and receive a 2-minute glance at the gospel every Sunday morning right to your phone. To learn more, go to www.stjohnleadershipnetwork.org/member and join for free today.
So I'm really challenging you here, guys, to take a stock of the question, what difference does God make in our world? And if you can't give me 3 things that God does, well, I'll give them for you. I'll try to help you out here, right? Well, 1, he brings unity. Huge. I mean, why? Because he's the father of all. He brings equality. Well, that's another big thing. And then he also brings the chance for genuine advancement for every person. So then that's on top of, I could keep on going through the list of the differences that God makes. But those are 3 real big ones right there that we all could see. Well, gosh, this has a huge value for us in our professional life. Unity, it's called teamwork. It's called being able to listen to other people. If each person on the team realized that they weren't God and that they needed one another in order to bring people or bring the team to success, my goodness, we started caring more for our fellow workers. The synergy in our workplace would skyrocket. And synergy, as we all know, is kind of what we're looking for. Now think about it then in terms of equality. Well, with equality, you've got a chance for every human being to see that they have a place at the table. And that regardless of their position in the company or position on the team or in the workforce, they still have a word to say because the dignity that they have is equal. Safety in the workplace, for example, and respect for one another, and even a culture that values the people who are at the lowest levels of the organization as much as the highest. Heck, we all know that this contributes to the bottom line in great ways, and also makes for a much more enjoyable workforce, where you have better management practices in place, fewer safety incidents in place, generalized lower levels of toxicity, and lower levels of turnover. I mean, this is all real practical things, and it comes from recognizing the equality of all people with the same level of dignity, because that dignity comes from the inalienable human rights that come from God, and that no state or cultural whim can remove from them. It's really a powerful thing. And then, of course, you have the fact that with God, you have a real ability for every human being to advance, because nobody is God themselves. When I can say that I am not God, my business is not God, my boss is not God, and that God wants every human being to come to the fullness of their potential, well, then even in the workspace, we create environments where people can excel, where people are rewarded and with a possibility for advancement, for training, where we invest in our workforce because our workforce is the company. That's a beautiful fruit of having God present in our world. So you can put all those things together, and then my challenge to go back to you is, if that's really the case, and it is, well, then why can't we promote that more aggressively and assertively? And I think we do, because not only in the workplace, but in the family. Sometimes you get, husbands and wives, and they say, I don't know why I should become more religious in the family. What, our family is about us, and then we bring God in it kind of on the side. We go to Mass at Christmas and Easter, and that's enough. That's enough, Christmas and Easter, and we'll keep God there, and then we'll keep our family going the way that we are. And then they come to an event with the St. John Leadership Network or with their parish or something where the priest starts challenging them about, how they can, in fact, start praying together, start putting crucifixes in their home, start having their home blessed. And there can be a resistance to it. People could say, I don't know, that's gonna change things, And I want to remind everybody that husbands look a lot more handsome when they wear halos. And it's the same thing with wives. I mean, like, think about it. If my wife was more godly, more closer to God, it'd be a more appealing thing. God is the greatest good that there is. He is pure beauty and wonderfulness. How could it possibly be bad to bring more God into a family if God is good? It'd be like saying, we want to deprive my family of goodness. Well, it's like, that doesn't make any sense. If you want your family to be good, how could putting the source of all goodness into your family make it any worse? It can't. And it's the same thing in my heart. Like in my marriage, if we put God in there, is that going to change the way? It's going to make you look even better. Because if you could love your wife like Christ loves the church and lays his life down for her, she's going to respect you, admire you. She's never going to want to leave you because you are giving to her something that helps her to grow. And if my wife would love and respect me, as you see how this works, you start going in an upward spiral. And you get an upward spiral because you actually have an upward trajectory. I mean, when you put God into the equation of your family, what you're telling the kids, what you're telling your spouses, what you're telling yourself is that, you know, where our family's going? Up. But if you don't have God, where's your family going? Well, it's going forward, I guess, in a circle. We're just kind of going through life, guys. We're going to see what happens to us next, and then we're going to do more of the same. And what ends up happening? Well, the greatest thing that we can do is have real comfortable things and go on really elegant vacations. But that's a real materialistic horizon. And we all know that in the end, that doesn't satisfy. The human heart is not made for more stuff or more elegant vacations. Those are very important things. Nothing wrong with them. But hey, that's just the context. You got to then fill that with a spirit. Where's the spirit going to come that transcends those things, that pushes your children beyond what you've given them to become great people? Well, there you got to have a spiritual trajectory. If you only have a material trajectory in your family, you've only given them the starting spot in life. To really teach your children well and to live in a family culture that's right, you got to say, our family doesn't exist for itself. It exists as a gift. And that's already great. So we give ourselves then to other people. Yep. And now how much even greater to say our family exists as a gift to God, to be his instrument in the world for other people. I mean, like, wow. You say that would be pretty incredible. You'd have kids that were sacrificing themselves in good ways and healthy ways, discipline, the hard work, sharing, understanding, warmth and acceptance and welcoming of other people. All those values, they all come from having God in the center of the family. I think, you know, the challenge I'd have for you is reflect to yourself on a family you really admire, a family that you say, I wish we could be like that. Not in what they have, not where they live, not their cars, but in the lifestyle in the heart of their home. I would warrant you that 95% of you have in your mind right now a family who has God in the center of them or has a relationship with him. Because there's a difference that God makes, both at work and in the family. And that difference is a good one. Why wouldn't we then anchor our families into God? Just in the same way as why wouldn't we anchor our career and our profession into God? There really is no downside to it. There's no downside to this equation here. Everything becomes a gift and everything becomes grace because God is good. And anchoring my family and my business into God is not going to hurt anything. On the contrary, it's going to guarantee a mindset in myself that will find success no matter what happens on my way.
Would you like to start your Thursday mornings with a scriptural leadership lesson? Join the St. John Leadership Network, where Father Nathan hosts a 30-minute call at 6:30 a.m. in all four U.S. time zones. To learn more, go to www.stjohnleadershipnetwork.org/member and join for free today.
So I want to tell you a little story about how I got the idea for this seminar here on the four anchors. And it's the truth. I spent a lot of my time in rural America. And coming from rural America myself, it was the culture that I was given, a Midwestern culture from Northwest Ohio. coming from the vicinities of Toledo, which I always, you know, refer to as the great American city, because it's just, it is. And that area of the country where I'm from has always been special to me. I was given a childhood where I was allowed to really enjoy the memories of a small kind of family farm area where we had animals and 4-H projects, and where people were had values that were expected and values that were shared. Small town America with small town pride. And if you've never been able to experience that wherever you are, be that I've seen it in the South, I've seen it in Texas, in Mississippi, in Florida, I've seen it in California. You know, it's the life of rural America, which is really kind of an interesting phenomenon, of course, because when you look at the political things, independently of parties and all of that, but when you look at issues and how people vote, the real divide in America is between the urban dwellers and the rural dwellers. And yet the vast majority of the space is dominated by these rural dwellers. And of course, this goes all the way back to the Founding Fathers and Alexander Hamilton's vision versus Jefferson when it comes to their vision for the values of society and whether we have an urban industrial-based world or an agricultural rural-based world. And there was a whole debate about this and what we allowed and favored in America. Thomas Jefferson was clearly on the side of saying that America will only flourish if we allow and focus on a rural economy because of the values of the virtues and of course, relationship with God, yes, but the healthy humanity that comes from robust manual labor in small communities of people where the family is the center focus. Hamilton had a different vision for it. And his vision was the one that more won out. In any case, I was reared in an environment that was much more favoring that of small town, rural, hardworking America, where people were also imbued with Christian values. And so having that experience and then working in those environments a lot with what I have today, there's something I just really admire. In terms of the dedication to the country, the understanding of unity, the understanding of the need for sacrifice in order to save and to build. I mean, when you've had your dad pass on the farm that he passed on from your grandfather, and you're aiming to pass it on to your children, well, there's something that you put a lot of pride in that farm. You understand your family's history. I mean, and you understand you built every square inch of it. So you keep it clean. I mean, you keep it clean, you keep it maintained, and you make it prosperous because it's not just about you. Instead of cashing in and selling off and going and living in somewhere else, you don't even think about that. You need to pass that on to your sons or your daughters because they're going to end up passing on to their. It's like you don't squander your patrimony. As a matter of fact, in a lot of times in these rural areas, folks will take the great wealth that they generate and they'll fold it right back into their business again to grow it again. Now, of course, there's a generalization, and you know, but like, there's something that I've been able to experience that I've wanted to get to the root of. I mean, how do you get people to work as hard as they work and be as happy, apparently, as many of them are with a lifestyle that then they don't really want to lose? Try to move into some of those communities, you'll never be able to. The land just is never for sale. It's like, and if it is for sale, it's snatched up instantly by their neighbors or their friends. It's even hard to find a root in those environments because the people love it there. Now, again, this can be varied. There's a lot of differences. The differences prove the point, okay? The exceptions prove the rule. And here I just want to, this is what's got me going. I said, what's the key to that culture? What's the key to a rural culture, small town America, and the happiness that they find there? And of course, there's many things to be thought of. But one thing that I've noticed is that all that they do seems to have a reference point one way or another back to faith and back to church. When you go to a lot of these towns in eastern Kansas, in North Dakota, and South Dakota, which I remind people are huge, you know, vast expanses of our country. I mean, this culture exists in more places than it doesn't, okay? It's like, and why do you find churches in all these little towns? I mean, I'm thinking of some of the towns that I've been in whose church is like, you know, twice the size of the population of the village. And it's because every single person in the whole area belonged to that one church. There's only one, you know, church in the entire city. And it was made magnificently with these people that sacrificed for it. And you say, well, why would they put so much pain into their church? What was going on there? And when you put a church that size in the middle of a town, it is the focal point of the town. I was speaking to a fellow the other day who was coming from the country was telling me that when he was a kid, they would go over three times a day to ring the church bells, and that then they would make sure to shovel the sidewalk, and that every night of the week there was an event going on in the church. It's where they played cards. It's where they had pie eating contests. It's where, you know, and then every Sunday, of course, they'd have Mass, and then the afternoon they'd have Vespers and Adoration. And it was just something that they did every single Sunday. And you say, well, what else happened? Well, when you had a church like that, the families rooted themselves in that church. They were anchored in their identity of the church, because you get your kids baptized in the church, first communions in the church, confirmations in the church, churches meetings every Sunday, other families meet. So the town forms a culture that's rooted in that church. And then from those families, well, work, which is, of course, this essential of life. It's what you have to do every day. It flows from the families who flow from the church. And when work flows from families that flow from church, it forms a culture that itself is open to the values that come from God. And so you have, what I say is four anchors. In the first hand, you say, well, God is the foundation of all things. That's what I'm talking about here. But in my next talk, I'm going to talk about how the family flows from God. And then when the family flows from God and anchors itself in God, well, it becomes a part of the foundation that allows work to then anchor itself correctly in the families. Having good workers equals, in many cases, I think in all cases, honestly, people who have good family values. The better your family is, odds are, the better a worker you're going to have. You know, exceptions possible, but at the same time, those family values are just critical to having a great workforce. And that, well, then if I can, what is then is rooted in the work? Well, the work generates a whole culture, a way of life in the area that then becomes anchored into the work, which is anchored into the family, which is anchored into God. And that culture then allows God to be manifest everywhere you go, and without even being necessarily proclaimed. I'm fascinated by that. I call it the four anchors, and I want to develop that with you. We're going to start this one, and we're going to go on from here. But in the end, remember this. God is always a blessing. He never hurts. He always helps. So in your own life, do you have a relationship with Him? And I encourage you to do it. Yield to Him. Give Him your heart. And with your heart, you'll give Him a whole world.
Dare great things for Christ.
Share your feedback with Father Nathan. Send us an email at communications@stjohninstitute.org. That's communications@stjohninstitute.org. And visit www.stjohninstitute.org and sign up for our newsletter to receive updates from Father Nathan.